So as we've been looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, the basic question that we're trying to answer is, when we look around us, good people are suffering and evil people seem to be prospering. Now, that's not the picture that was presented in the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs, the writer says, basically, if you do what you ought to do, if you do what God expects you to do, you will be blessed. It doesn't always work that way. And the book of Ecclesiastes is God helping us to understand that it doesn't always work that way. And some of the things that we think we could rely on that would eliminate that awful thing that we see, good people suffering, evil people prospering, some of the things that we think we could bring to bear against that understanding just turn out to be insufficient to really answer the question. Why is that happening? So today he's going to talk about wealth. And remember, what we've said is the things that are just not adequate to deal with the observation that we've made, those things are vanity. They're the writer uses the word hevel in the original language, and it just means it's not sufficient. Vanity is a kind of an odd word. We look at that and we think, well, that means it's worthless. No, it's not worthless. It just won't answer the question that we posed. Why do righteous people suffer and why do evil people seem to prosper? So we're going to look at today one of those things that we think we could use that would eliminate that disparity. What we're going to look at is wealth. And maybe the better way to think about the second half of this is honor. If we could bring our wealth into the situation, could we prevent that from happening? If I just had enough money, could I make sure that when I did what I was supposed to do, then I would be prospering? And Solomon is going to tell us, no, even that won't work. So let's read Ecclesiastes. We're going to start in the fifth chapter at verse 8, and we'll continue into the sixth chapter a little bit. Now, I'm going to read this morning from the International Standard Translation. It's not a translation that we use, that I use very often, but I want to read from this translation this morning because I think it makes things a little bit clearer than even the American Standard. King James is hard to understand. The American Standard is easier. And I appreciate what Bob did, changing the he's and the hims so that we have names, because we can get lost in the he's and the hims, can't we? Good idea to make those transitions, even if we make them in our mind. So this morning, here's the International Standard Translation. Don't be surprised when you see the poor oppressed and the violent perverting both justice and verdicts in a province. One high official watches another, and there are ones higher still who are over them. Also, the increase of the land belongs to everyone. The king himself is served by the field. Whoever loves money will never have enough money. Whoever loves luxury will not be content with abundance. This is also pointless at that vanity idea. When possessions increase, so does the number of consumers. Therefore, what good are they to their owners except to look at them? Sweet is the sleep of a working man, whether he eats a little or a lot, but the excess wealth of the rich will not allow him to rest. I've observed a painful tragedy on the earth. Wealth hoarded by its owners hurts them. That wealth is lost in troubled circumstances. Which is lost in troubled circumstances? The son is born, but there's nothing left to it. Just as he came from his mother's womb, he will leave as naked as he came. He'll receive no profit from his efforts. He cannot carry away even a handful. This is also a painful tragedy. However a person comes, he also departs. So what does he gain as he labors after the wind? Furthermore, all his days he lives in darkness, with great sorrow, anger, and affliction. Look, I observe that it is good and prudent to eat, drink, and enjoy all this good in a person's work that he doeth on the earth during the limited days of his life, which God has given him for his allotment. Furthermore, every person to whom God gives wealth, riches, and the ability to enjoy them, to accept this allotment, to rejoice in this work, it's a gift of God. He will not brood much over the days of his life, since God will keep him occupied with the joys of his heart. There exists another misfortune that I've observed on the earth, and it's a heavy burden on human beings. A man to whom God gives wealth, riches, and honor so that he lacks none of his heart's desires, but God does not give him the capacity to enjoy them. Instead, a stranger consumes them. This is a pointless, a grievous affliction. A man might father 100 children, live for many years so that the length of his life is long. But if his life does not overflow with goodness, he doesn't receive a proper burial. I maintain that stillborn children are better off than this, because stillborn children arrive in pointlessness, leave in darkness, and their names are covered in darkness. Furthermore, though they never saw the sun or learned anything, they're more content than the other. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice over without experiencing the best, aren't all of them going to the same place? Every person works for his own self-interest, but his desires remain unsatisfied. What advantage is the wise person over the fool? What advantage does the poor man have in knowing how to face life? It's better to focus on what you can see than to meander after your self-interests. This is also pointless in chasing the wind. Whatever exists has already been named already. People know what it means to be human. A person cannot defeat one who is more powerful than he is. Because many words lead to pointlessness, how do people profit from this? Who knows what is best for people in this life? Every day of their pointless lives that they pass through like a shadow. Who informs people on earth with what will come along after them? Well, that sounds really distressing, doesn't it? It sounds really depressing in a lot of ways. So let's go back and let's begin at the beginning. Don't be surprised when you make the observation that we have made. There's nothing shocking about it. Good people suffer and evil people prosper. Has anybody ever made that observation? I think all of us would probably raise our hands and say, why does it happen that way? And then I don't really know what to make of this phrase. He says, one high official watches another, and there is one higher still over them. I think maybe he's saying it's the wolf is watching the hen house, and that's the reason why things aren't the way that they should be. Other than that, I really can't make sense out of this phrase. Yeah, Kim.
Needed a career in HR and public agencies. You know, everybody has a boss. You always have a boss. And the words high official makes me think that it's more like in a governmental agency. And they watch out for one another because they're kind of crooked. And they're watching out for self. And so they don't always act appropriately. And so you're always suspicious of what another official is doing. You don't know what their motives are. And yet, you still have someone higher over you. You always have a boss. Always have someone else that you have to answer to.
Yeah, Brittany's head's going to fall off right now. She's shaking her head, yes.
She doesn't have to be in a public agency. She's
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Well, but if you look at it, even the president of the United States has a boss. And in our and in democracy, it should be the people that he answers to. The way that our democracy got a little bit tweaked, I'm not sure that that's viewed that way. But we should always have there's always someone that you have to answer to, and there's always someone that can expose your corruption.
Yeah, Carol.
And I wonder if there might be somebody who can always expose your corruption, but there might also be somebody bigger than you who's even more corrupt. Oh, yeah. And it's like, don't be surprised if the guy head over this guy and the guy keep going up and up and up, and you go to the Supreme Court and it's like everybody's still all, no, it's still going to be the poor is going to be oppressed and the violent are going to.
Yeah, Kim.
Well, I think that's part of the don't be surprised. I mean, it's all in the same sentence, I think, or the same context. You know, I've heard people say, I don't know that Christians can be in politics. And I think part of the problem in politics is because Christians have sort of said, as a Christian, I can't get ahead in politics unless I am corrupted because of the way the system works. And so Christians have kind of backed out of that and have abandoned that because we realize that this is true, that this is very difficult. We're always going to have people who are going to be the oppressors.
And that's not just politics. I mean, I know people who say, I don't really want to be a boss because I could see what was going on and I'd try to fix it, and the people over me won't let me fix it. So it's just there. The fox is watching the hen house. And I don't know that we're ever going to resolve this. Wealth is not the key. You think, well, I want to be Elon Musk, and I'm going to just buy the company, and then I'll make it do what I think it ought to do. And you find out that, no, you really can't do that. It is depressing in a way. At least it depresses me. When I got out of college, I was going to become an attorney. And in California, you can do that. All you have to do is pass the bar exam. You don't have to go to law school. And I thought I was smarter than everybody else, and I could pass the bar exam. So I went to work for a law firm, and I thought, well, this is one place where when you work hard and you produce good material, you're rewarded for it. And then I started talking to some associate attorneys, that's the guys who are just coming into the firm. Their name is not on the letterhead. They're the guys that are just coming in. And I said, you produce good material. What happens? Somebody whose name is on the letterhead puts his name on the material that you produced and you get no credit for it. And I thought, that stinks. And that it does. It does. I thought, publishing would be the way to deal with this. And I could publish, I could conduct studies, I could publish the studies. And then I found out that the guy who helps you to get it published gets to put his name on the paper first. And your name is in the et al. There is no answer. I wish that there was. Now, I don't know what to do with verse 9. Verse 9 just kind of comes at me, and I don't know how to fit it into this discussion. The increase of the land belongs to everyone. The king himself is served by his field. Maybe what he's saying is it ought to belong to everyone. You do the work, you get to eat of it. But you do the work, and the king gets his part first. Yeah, Kim.
Well, I think that his refers to the everyone, and I think that it's basically talking about taxes and usury. I think it's, you've got your own land and you work it and you produce, but somebody else is going to get a piece of that.
Yeah.
The king's always going to get a piece of your field.
Yeah. That's not going to answer the question. You think, okay, I'll buy the property. I'll do with it what I want to do with it, and I will benefit. Yeah, go ahead.
This is really interesting, I think, but because what he's doing is he's looking at this from the standpoint we would look at it, and that is, what are we going to do about that? Are we going to buy the land? Are we going to be a bigger politician? What are we going to do? And the answer really isn't answered for us well until you look at Christ, and he's in Mark,
right?
The second, he says, in parables, he says, the kingdom of God is if a man would scatter seed on the ground and sleeps and rises night and day, and the seed sprouts and grows, and he doesn't know how. But the earth produces by itself, first the blade, then the ear, then the full grain in the ear. But when the grain is ripe, at once he puts the sickle and becomes the harvest. The answer is that we just the seed. Christ was the seed, and we just do little bit, and that is, there is a point at which there's a tipping point, and society changes. If enough people plant that seed and just live that life, but you can't do it from the top down, and that's Solomon's point, is, it's useless to do it their way. If you fight their war, their way, you lose every time. You let them define the argument, if you let them define the rules, but if you define it Christ's way, then even when you're losing, you're winning.
Good point. And that skips ahead a little bit to the conclusion in this book is you have to have a view of everything that's going on that's not restricted to what's under the sun. You have to include the spiritual aspect. But, that's hard to do. It's really hard to do. Yeah, Bob?
My American Standard gets a whole different idea to verse 9. It reads this way. After all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage to the land. If you cultivate land that hasn't been cultivated before, it goes from a wild nature to being something productive, useful to everyone.
Okay. Good point. I'm still back to, I don't know how this fits into the whole discussion. But that is a good point. Okay. Verse 10. And here's why amassing enough money so that you don't answer to somebody is not going to work. Not only is it not going to resolve the problem, but it creates problems in itself. Okay? So it's hevel, it's vanity, it's point, it won't get you the answer to this question that we posed, and it'll create more problems for you. So he says, whoever loves money will never have enough money. That's why in the New Testament it says the love of money is the root of all evil. If that's what your life is about, you would never have enough. You live in a nice house and you want the nicer one that's around the corner. And you drive a nice car and you really want a nicer car. Does anybody do that? I think social media feeds this, because we look at social media and we always want something better. Whoever has luxury is not going to be satisfied with luxury. It won't be enough. It creates this problem for you. And here's why. When goods increase or possessions increase, so does the number of consumers. This is the person who says, I work and work and work and work, and the more I make, the more they take in taxes. At one point, the American population was taxed. The highest rate of tax was 76% of what you made. And that was shortly after the recession. It's not that high anymore. But you do get to a point where the more you make, the more you're required to pay. I actually talked to a man one time. He was a barber. And he sat down and he figured out, I pay this much in taxes. I make this much income. If I cut 10 more people's hair, my income will go up, but it'll push me into the next tax bracket and I'll wind up making less than what I made if I don't cut 10 more people's hair. Yeah, Carol.
Also, you get the bigger house, you got to have the maid and the pool guy and yard guy and all of these other consumers, all of these other people who now you're working for. I have a niece who's tried to grow her husband's plumbing business, and eventually they figured out that they were better off with just two trucks, because otherwise they were just paying for these other guys' jobs and it was just too much. So yeah. Consumed.
Yeah. Yeah. I one time owned a business, and a secretary who worked for me came to me and said, you know, I've been working here for almost 5 years and I have not had a raise in 5 years. I think I need a raise. And I said, you're right. You do. I've been working here 5 years and I haven't taken home a paycheck. I'm the guy who dumps the trash. I'm the guy who cleans the bathrooms because I can't afford to have a janitor. You're right. You need a raise. You're fired. That's just the way things work. You always think that somebody is doing better than you are. And in many ways, it's because you don't understand what they're doing. Yeah, I can take Friday off because I'm the guy who signs the paychecks. But remember, I sign the paychecks even when I take Friday off. The office eats while you sleep. It always works that way. The sleep of a working man, whether he eats a little or a lot, is restful. Excess wealth of the rich will not allow them to rest. You worry. And in part, you worry because you are providing the income for other families. And you worry that if something goes wrong with your business, you won't be able to pay these people that are relying on you. And so you worry. Even when you're doing well, you worry. And that's just the way that you have to be.
Well, yeah, and I think all these points are things that really, especially as young people, we need to look at. Because the youth of America today, they want what their parents have. So I want to be the CEO. I want to be this. I want this. I want this. And all they see is that dollar figure or that title on a door or my name at the top of a paper. And when we get down here to verse 12 and we see the sleep of the working man is restful, I miss those days. So I miss the days when I didn't build cabinets and solve problems in my brain 24 hours a day to please my customers. When I used to just go to work and be happy if there were plans on the table, wood in the bin, and people stayed out of my way, and I could just work like a madman. But we always are looking, and you know, you're going to get to the point where if you're just looking at what's under the sun, this will always be a struggle. This will always be hard. But this is teaching us there's blessings in any stage of life that we're in, and there's cursings. You can look at the Hollywood individual rock stars and see how miserable their lives are. And we say, oh, how tragic that Kurt Cobain blew his head off. That man was, he had it all. He had money, he had fame. It wasn't enough. Constantly searching. So what do? You look for other things to make you happy. Instead of being blessed in our families and blessed in our relationship with God. And then the rest of it is just going to fall into place the way it falls into place.
But it's hard. It's hard to get there. It really is hard to get there. And I don't want what my father had. My dad drove a Toyota pickup that was really old. I want to drive the one that Dean drives. I'm just teasing. I want a new truck. And, you know, we're always that way. Okay, let's continue here. I've observed a painful tragedy on the earth. Wealth hoarded by its owners harms him. Wealth hoarded by its owners. Do you ever know people that had so much money that all they could do was look at it? I've never known anybody that was like that. But sometimes and this is one of the reasons that wealth won't deal with the problem. The problem, as we've always stated, the problem is good people are suffering, evil people are prospering. So I'll get enough wealth, that won't affect me, and all I do is look at it. Is it possible to have so much money that you can't spend it? I guess I've never been there. I never have a problem at the end of the month with having money left over. At the end of the money, I always have months left over. So it even if you had a lot, you're not gonna, it's not gonna benefit you. Yeah, Carol.
But it's not just when he's hoarding things that he would have normally done in his life when he wasn't wealthy, he now won't do because the wealth is more important than doing things and being with people and throwing anniversary parties and whatever. He hoards the wealth. So he's not going to spend it. He's not going to share it with anybody. It's.
You know. Yeah, I want to have a nice house so that I can enjoy my house. I don't want you to come into my house because you're going to track dirt in. And you'll get my nice white carpets dirty. It always works that way. Yeah, Margaret.
I see it as part of it that says that it's harmful to its owner, that we're here to serve each other. And if we're not doing that, we're not going to be happy.
Yeah, that's a good point. An excellent point. Somebody else had their hand up. Was that you, Nolan? No. It's that's just the way it works. You're not going to take it with you. Okay. So it's not going to help you that way. Naked you came from your mother's womb, and naked you will leave this earth. You know. Yeah, Eileen.
But look at all the people that have won the lottery. They've either wasted it or it's caused them nothing but trouble in their families.
Miserable.
And they're, you know, I mean, I would say a prayer. I pray that they do what God wants them to do and they're good stewards with that money because it's not always going to cause happiness.
Yeah, maybe that's a good illustration of somebody that certainly has wealth. And you think that's going to solve all of your problems. It's not. It probably will increase your problems. You know, I really do think that some of the happiest times Tim and I had were when we lived in a one-bedroom apartment that was about the size of this stage up here. And we almost got thrown out every time we'd have company come over. We'd get too loud, and the people above us would complain, and the people below us would complain, and they'd tell us we couldn't have friends to come over. And you think, I've got to get out of that. But maybe that was the happiest times that we had. Okay. Furthermore, this is kind of the conclusion of this wealth discussion. All his days he lives in darkness with great sorrow and anger and affliction. That's not the answer. It won't answer the question. It's Hevel. And this is one of those times where, remember he said, you know, we think sometimes that wisdom would be enough to eliminate this problem. And he says, hey, wisdom is a good thing. It just won't answer the problem. This is one of those times where he says, wealth is not going to answer the problem. And on top of that, wealth really creates problems for you. It's not like wisdom. You know, get wisdom. But there is no redeeming value, it seems, in wealth. He says this, and this is what Dean was talking about. I observe that it's good and prudent to eat, drink, and enjoy all that's good in a person's work with than he does on the earth during the limited days of his life that God gives him for his allotment. For every person to whom God has given wealth and riches and the ability to enjoy them, to accept this allotment, to rejoice in his work, this is a gift from God. If you have enough, enjoy it. So it's not as if the way to be close to God is to assume a monastic lifestyle. You know, there were people, when Nolan and Amelia went over to England, they came back and they talked about people. There were people who had themselves sealed into the walls of churches. And they lived their life with nothing. And they thought that was going to be the key to wealth. Now, that's an extreme form of monasticism. Then you have people who are monks and they decide that they're going to live in a monastery and they eschew all of the earthly possessions that they could. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I think verse 19 is the key to this. I think that's what he's getting at, is to recognize that this wealth, that whatever comes to you is a gift from God. The person who is harmed by his wealth, the person who's anxious, and always worried about it and on edge about it because they're self-reliant. It depends on them to keep producing this wealth. It depends on them to do all of this. And so that burden is very heavy. And like Margaret said, they don't see outside of themselves, so they can't use it to benefit others. They just keep hoarding it for themselves because they have such responsibility and such anxiety over it. If you recognize it's a gift from God, and I can use a friend of ours as an example. He made a lot of money. He was very wealthy. And then he lost it all at once. And he said, well, I made it. I lost it. It's just money. I'll get it again. And he did. He earned some more. And for him, he just kind of had it in the right perspective. He was a Christian. He kind of had figured that out, that it came to him from God. It's gone right now, but it'll come back to me again. I'll just work for it. It is what it is. It's just money.
Yep. He lived in the weirdest house I've ever seen. It was a round house. It was beautiful. Out in the woods, lived in a round house. And, you know, he left Alaska with all of his possessions in a car. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a station wagon. Okay. He went from being way up here to being flat broke. And now he lives in a house that's beautiful, and I don't live in that house, but lives in a beautiful house. That's the way he is. Okay. I wish we could get to chapter 6. Ron, you want to cover 6 next week?
That would be fine.
Okay. Well, I had originally intended to move on from this, but Ron's going to cover chapter 6 that we didn't get to cover this morning, and he's going to talk a little bit about honor.